Today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 14. Chapter 14 is entitled Pregnancy of Diti in the Evening. Today we are on text 41. Tada Vishveshvara Krudho.
Tada Vishveshvara Krudho.
भगवाल्लोकभावनः हनिष्यति अवतीर्याशु. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Translation: At that time, the Lord of the Universe, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the well-wisher of all living entities, will descend and kill them, just as Indra smashes the mountains with his thunderbolts. Purport: As stated in Bhagavad Gita 4.8, the Lord descends as an incarnation to deliver the devotees and kill the miscreants. The Lord of the universe and of everything would appear to kill the sons of Diti because of their offending the devotees of the Lord. There are many agents of the Lord, such as Indra, Chandra, Varuna, Goddess Durga and Kali, who can chastise any formidable miscreants in the world. The example of mountains being smashed by a thunderbolt is very appropriate. The mountain is considered the most strongly built body within the universe. Yet, it can be easily smashed by the arrangement of the Supreme Lord. The Supreme Personality of Godhead does not need to descend in order to kill any strongly built body. He comes down just for the sake of his devotees. Everyone is subject to the miseries offered by material nature. But because the activities of miscreants, such as killing innocent people and animals or torturing women, are harmful to everyone and are therefore a source of pain for the devotees, the Lord comes down. He descends only to give relief to his ardent devotees. The killing of the miscreant by the Lord is also the mercy of the Lord towards the miscreant, although apparently the Lord takes the side of the devotee. Since the Lord is absolute, there is no difference between his activities of killing the miscreants and favoring the devotees. Om Ajnanati Mirantasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Tadamahyam Dadati Svapadantikam Mukam karoti vachalam pangum langayate girim yat kripatam aham vande shri guru dinatarinam vancha kalpatarubhyascha kripa sindubhyaiva cha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha jai shri krishna chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda, Shri Advaita Gadadhara, Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
So we are seeing here that the conversation between Kashyapa Muni and Diti is continuing. In the earlier part of the chapter, we saw that Kashyapa Muni and Diti united at the wrong time, and Kashyapa Muni was aware of that, but just to please his wife, he had to give in. And now he is telling his wife is feeling a bit remorseful, so he is telling his wife what will be the repercussions of such an action of uniting at the wrong time. So he is telling that because everything was inauspicious, since we united at the wrong time, and it was not a good situation also, because he was actually quite involved, absorbed in doing his evening duties. And at that time, Diti approached him and actually disturbed him from doing his puja and brought him to this situation of uniting with her. So he says that since everything was inauspicious, your womb is condemned now. Your sons, there will be two sons who will be born from your womb, and they will be the greatest demons who were ever there on this earth. And he says that, and he saw that Diti was feeling very repentant. In the earlier verse, Diti is actually feeling repentant. Let the wrath of Lord Shiva, because he is the one who roams around during inauspicious times, to actually put ghosts and goblins and such inauspicious souls in the womb of a lady. So she actually is repentant, and she says, oh, let Lord Shiva's wrath not come on me. and let the Supreme Personality of Godhead be merciful. She is repentant about her actions. So then Kashyapa Muni is saying that although your womb is condemned now because there will be two great demons who will be born, but they will be killed by the Lord. So that is how Kashyapa Muni is actually trying to pacify her now. And in saying that, he is saying that when you know your demoniac sons will be torturing everyone in this universe, they will be spreading so much of misery and suffering amongst the living entities of this universe. And we know from the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says, in Prabhupada is also quoting that verse 4.8, where the Lord says, Paritranaya sadhunam vinashaya cha dushkritam dharma sansthapanathaya sambhavami yuge yuge. So the Lord descends whenever he sees that there is a rise in irreligion. We know that. We have seen in so many avatars of the Lord that the Lord always comes down to protect his devotees and to annihilate the miscreants, like Prabhupada is also mentioning in the purport. So the Prabhupada is glorifying more the Bhaktavatsala feature of the Lord in his purport. Prabhupada says the first line of the shloka of 4.8, Paritranaya sadhunam. So Prabhupada says that the purpose of the Lord descending is actually to protect his devotees. Because the Lord cannot see the suffering of his devotees, he cannot see his devotees in misery. And that is the whole purpose why the Lord descends. So Vinashaya cha dushkritan, Prabhupada says that that can be carried out by any agency of the Lord. Even the demigods are actually empowered enough to kill. Like Prabhupada is quoting Kali, Durga, Chandra, Indra. All of them are empowered. They can take care of miscreants. So why does the Lord descend? It is because he is Bhaktavatsala. He is because he is very, very merciful. He cannot tolerate at all that his devotees are suffering because of the torturing of these demons. So in fact, it is also mentioned in the scriptures that when Lord Krishna fights with the demons or he kills the demons, actually the Lord only wants to enjoy. It is not the Lord's nature to fight. So when Krishna fights with these demons, it is actually the Vasudev feature of Krishna which comes out and which fights with these demons. And when the Lord protects the devotees, it is Krishna himself, the feature of Krishna himself, Swayam Bhagavan, who comes and protects the devotees. So that is the difference. In protection, he is Swayam Bhagavan. But when he has to fight and he has to kill the miscreants, it's his Vasudev Ficharika which comes. He doesn't even bother to come down and kill the miscreants himself. So that is the difference. We see that how merciful the Lord is, and that is what is brought out by Prabhupada over here. So even in case of Diti's sons, Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha, who will be born from her womb soon and who will be the greatest demons that were present on the earth. So the Lord actually comes down to save Prahlad Maharaj. In terms of Hiranyakashipu, he comes in the form of Narsimha Dev. So he does take care of Narsimha Dev and kill him with his nails. But he had more come because he was feeling merciful towards Prahlad Maharaj. That was the reason why he descended. In the same way, when the Lord came down as Varaha Dev, it was more to save Mother Earth. Because Varaha Dev had plunged Mother Earth in the depths of the Garbhodaka ocean. And that is why the Lord comes, to actually protect Mother Earth. And killing by Varaha Dev of Hiranyaksha was just another pastime. Like, that was not the sole purpose of the appearance of Varaha Dev. So we also see over here, in Prabhupada is mentioning that the Lord is equal to everyone, whether he kills the miscreants or he protects the devotees, it's the same. So we see over here, and we even see in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Samoham sarva bhuteshu name dvesho stina priyaha. So Krishna says, Samoham sarva bhuteshu, I am equal to everyone. I have no envy towards any living entity in this material world. So then we see what Prabhupada is saying in the purport over here, and Krishna's statement, Samoham sarva bhuteshu, they appear to be contradictory. That how is it that the Lord is saying he is equal to everyone, but then Prabhupada is explaining in the purport that he comes down only to protect his devotees. And then why is it that the Lord is protecting devotees and killing miscreants? Then how come the Lord is equal to everyone? And this question came up in the mind of Yudhishthir Maharaj also. In the beginning of the 7th canto, before the entire pastime of Narsimha Dev is described in the 7th canto, the first chapter, in fact the first chapter is entitled, The Lord is Equal to Everyone. And it starts with Yudhishthir Maharaj actually asking Narad Muni. They were all sitting in the assembly after the Rajsuya sacrifice. And in the Rajsuya sacrifice, we know the pastime, that how Shishupal was killed by Lord Krishna with his Sudarshan Chakra. So Yudhishthir Maharaj saw, and all the assembled devotees, all the assembled people over there saw this pastime taking place. And everyone knew, in fact the Pandavas knew, when Shishupal was continuously blaspheming Lord Krishna. Actually the Pandavas, especially Bhima, they wanted to get up and they wanted to kill Shishupal. But Krishna was restraining them from doing that. he kept stopping them because he had given a vow to Shishupal's mother. Because Shishupal was their cousin. So he had given a vow to Shishupal's mother that I will not kill him. He will not kill him till he commits his 100th offense against Lord Krishna. Only then will I raise my weapon and kill Shishupal. I will give him that much leeway. Like such a long rope Krishna had given to Shishupal. So he just waits and he makes even the Pandavas wait. He does not allow the Pandavas, especially Bhima, to take any action against Shishupal. Even though in the entire assembly of Ratsuya sacrifice, Shishupal was blaspheming Lord Krishna. So Krishna waits, and then when Shishupal has, Krishna was keeping a count actually. And when Shishupal had committed the 100th offense, Krishna releases his Sudarshan Chakra. And he also knew that in Ratsuya sacrifice, it was a very auspicious sacrifice ceremony which was happening. So he knew there should be no bloodshed. So the way Krishna kills Shishupal, there was not even a drop of blood. His head just cleanly severed off from his body. And what was more astonishing for all the people present over there, and especially for Yudhishthir Maharaj, was that Shishupal's soul, like a bright, bright shining soul, came out of the body of Shishupal and it went and merged into the body of Lord Krishna. And this was very astonishing for Yudhishthir Maharaj. So he's questioning Narad Muni. He says that we knew personally that Shishupal was such an offender. Now we know the verse, Yatha Taror Mula Nishchanena, that if you want to satisfy everyone in this universe, you satisfy Lord Krishna because he is the root of the tree. So if you water the root of the tree, automatically the twigs, branches, flowers, leaves, everything gets satisfied. But in the same way, if you offend Lord Krishna, then you imagine you are offending the entire universe. And that is the risk which Shishupal was taking. He was offending the entire universe by offending Krishna. So like his offenses were so much. And Yudhishthir Maharaj is surprised. He says that I know the philosophy that in order to achieve liberation and in order to achieve Sayujya Mukti, which Shishupal achieved, you have to be a great transcendentalist. You have to be actually a liberate, you have to actually pursue bhakti, or you have to pursue the path of moksha. You have to be above the bodily concept of life. You have to do tapasya. Only then will you be able to get Sayujya Mukti with the Lord. It's not a cheap thing. But how is it that Shishupal, who was such a great offender, got this privilege of having Sayujya Mukti with the Lord? This is the question he raises to Narad Muni in the assembly. And at that time Narad Muni explains, and that is why the chapter is entitled Krishna is equal to everyone. He explains that Krishna is just like the loving father of all living entities. So he says that Krishna is actually equal to everyone. But he is like a loving father. Now a father may have two children. One child may be very naughty. And one child, the other child will be very obedient, very docile, listens to whatever the father says, follows the father's instructions. He is very loving and caring towards his father. So one child is like that, but the other child is very naughty. And he is not very obedient. He likes to have his own way. He revolts against the father. So all these different qualities are there in two children. Now if he is a proper father, obviously he is going to love both his children equally. But his treatment towards both the children will not be the same. With the naughty child, the loving father will deal differently because he knows the naughty child needs some correction. He knows that the naughty child is deviating from the path of good path, of becoming a good son, an obedient son. So he knows that there is some punishment, there is some different way I'll have to deal with this naughty child to bring him back. But with the obedient child, he does not need to do that. So with the obedient child, the father's dealing is going to be very different. And that is how Narad Muni explains the equality or the impartial feature of Lord Krishna. That Krishna is actually equal to everyone. And like Prabhupada says over here also. So when he is dealing with a naughty child, who are the miscreants, and when he is dealing with the obedient child, who are his devotees, he is actually the same loving father. So the treatment may appear to be different, that he is killing the miscreants or he is annihilating the miscreants and he is protecting the devotees. But that is what is best for both these children in these situations. So even when he kills, and that is why Narad Muni explains, that even though Shishupal was offender, Krishna was very loving towards him. And Shishupal was always absorbed in the thoughts of Krishna. Although in a contrary way, but he was always absorbed in thoughts of Krishna. In the same way that Kamsa was absorbed. So out of fear, Kamsa was so much fearful that Krishna is going to kill him because he had heard the prophecy. So he was always absorbed in a negative way in thinking of Krishna. But whatever it is, he was thinking of Krishna all the time. And in fact, in one of the verses in that chapter, Narad Muni explains also, that how Kamsa achieved Krishna through his fear and the gopis achieved Krishna through their love and devotion. There is a famous verse which is there in that chapter. So in the same way, he explains that Shishubal was also very, very absorbed in thinking about Krishna all the time. And but although, you know, his thinking was how to kill Krishna, how to bring him down, how he's an offender, his thinking was like that. But still Krishna dealt with him as a loving father only. And that is why he gave him Sayujya Mukti. Because Krishna loves even the miscreants, or whether they are the miscreants or whether they are his devotees, Krishna loves everyone equally. So Krishna is compared to the sun or the rain in that section of Bhagavatam. So as we see, when the sun shines, the sun is impartial. The sun is distributing its heat and light to everyone equally in the universe. In the same way, when rain falls, the rain doesn't choose or it doesn't discriminate. Okay, I should fall in these areas, but these areas don't need me, so I should not fall there. The rain falls equally on the ocean, which is full of water, and the rain falls that much equally on the land also, where there might be so much scarcity of water. In the same way is the sun. The sun is also impartial. But it is up to the receptacle, Narad Muni explains, that it is up to the person. So, ye yatha mam prapadyante. So, how a receptacle absorbs the sunlight, or how a receptacle absorbs the rain, that much the receptacle will benefit by the sunlight or the rain. In the same way, Narad Muni says that how you absorb, how a devotee reciprocates with this love, that much he will benefit. So we see the Pandavas were always reciprocating. They were so much surrendered souls of the Lord. And therefore we think that Krishna was partial towards the Pandavas. And Duryodhan, even though Krishna tried and tried and tried, Duryodhan was absolutely not turning around. And we may think that Krishna was impartial. Krishna did not show proper justice. Why did the war happen? Just to put his devotee on the throne. But actually he tried. He went as a peace messenger. He, you know, Pandavas just asked for 5 villages. But nothing. Nothing Duryodhan was agreeing to. And that is why the war was inevitable. So Krishna meted out that treatment of, you know, doing the war and killing all the miscreants in the Mahabharat war. But again all of them were liberated. Because they were looking at Krishna when they were fighting. It is explained. So this is how the Lord is equal to everyone, and Prabhupada is also explaining over here. He is equal to everyone, whether it's the miscreants or whether it is his devotees. Only his treatment is different. By killing the miscreants also, still he is delivering them. And same thing happened with Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu. He delivered them. Whoever gets killed by the hands of the Lord, actually he is delivering those demons. He is taking them back to Godhead. He is either giving them Sayujya Mukti, he is giving them liberation somehow, even though he is killing these demons. So even, you know, when Lord, for example, came as Ram, now today is Vijayadashmi as per the Melbourne calendar. So Vijayadashmi is the day when actually Lord Ram killed Ravana on the battlefield in Lanka. So that is also the same feature of the Lord we are seeing. He is actually killing Ravana, but he is also liberating him. And he actually put Vibhishana on the throne, who was his dear devotee. But again, you know, the treatment is the same for the Lord. Whether he kills Ravana on Vijayadashmi day, Lord Ram killed Ravana, or whether he favored Vibhishana and he put him on the throne. In the same way, after he killed Hiranyakashipu, Diti's son, like Kashyapa Muni is telling over here, he will put Prahlad Maharaj on the throne. So he came for these, and his treatment appeared to be different. But it was the same. The result, the end result was the same. For both of them. Both of them got liberation at the end. But obviously, devotees, because they reciprocate with pure love, and therefore they get pure love of Godhead. That is the result they get. So this is the impartial feature of the Lord which is being explained over here. And there was a similar pastime which happened long, long ago. And today is the appearance day of Shripad Madhavacharya. And when before Shripad Madhavacharya appeared, we will discuss for the next few minutes about the life of Shripad Madhavacharya. It was a similar feature of the Lord because of which Madhavacharya appeared. So long ago, when, you know, Buddhism was prevalent in the world still, and also when, you know, Shankaracharya had come and spread his Mayavad philosophy, it was very, very prevalent in the world, and people had all become impersonalists. Nobody was believing in the personal feature of the Lord. Everyone had totally, because of following the teachings of Shankaracharya, people had absolutely deviated from the path of personalism or of pure devotion to the Lord. And at that time, the demigods saw this situation. So headed by Lord Brahma, they all went to Lord Vishnu. And they submitted their plea. And this is when Kali Yuga had already started. So they submitted their plea to the Lord. And especially Lord Brahma, who was representing all the demigods, he spoke to Lord Vishnu. And he said that we can see that there is impersonalism spread in the universe right now, on the Earth's planet especially. And we can see that voidism is also spread, because Lord Buddha just went some time ago and he has spread voidism and gone. So people are either following voidism or people are following impersonalism. The pure path of bhakti is completely obscured. And Brahma also pleaded to the Lord. He said that the pure, you know, sampradaya which I was trying to establish, the Brahma sampradaya which he had started, he said that that has been completely obstructed. Nobody is taking to the path of bhakti or adopting these pure sampradayas which are there, because they are all getting misled by Shankaracharya's teachings or by Lord Buddha's teachings. They are getting misled and following voidism or impersonalism. And my Lord, we know that your scheduled incarnation is still many years away. So the scheduled incarnation, which is the Leela Avatar, was to come at the end of Kali Yuga. But even Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was to come as Channa Avatar. There was still time for that. So they said, Lord, please, you only suggest some solution. Since your scheduled incarnation is some time away, you please send someone, your own representative, who will smash these theories, these bogus theories which are there right now on the earth planet, and who will establish the pure teachings of bhakti on earth planet. So the Lord, again, we see that his merciful chief feature, his devotees are very dear to him. So because of his bhakta vatsala feature, he actually looked at all the demigods. And among the demigods, Vayu was also present. So he looked at Vayu and he chose Vayu to do this work for him. So he instructed Vayu, personal instructions he gave to Vayu, and he told him that you go down to the earth planet, you take birth in any pious Brahmin's family, and you go and spread the pure teachings of bhakti. You again bring back the pure teachings of bhakti. You again establish my personal form as the highest aspect of the absolute truth. Because that is what is lost right now in the world. People are thinking I'm, you know, Brahman, I'm light. Some people are not even thinking I'm light. They are thinking they are God because they are following the Mayavad philosophy. So you go and establish the pure teachings of devotional service, and you go and establish how worshipping the personal form of the Lord, rendering direct service to the personal form of the Lord, can help them to develop pure love of Godhead. And in this way he gave these instructions to Vayu. And the demigod Vayu agreed, okay, I will go down in this material world. So during that time, and this was approximately 750 years ago, there was a Brahmin and he was of the Shivali origin. So this Shivali Brahmin, his name was Madhyageha Bhatt and his wife Vedavati. They were actually living in a village called Pajaka Kshetra. And this village is very close to the town of Udupi. Now Udupi is a very famous holy place in India. It's a place where Udupi Krishna is worshipped. Even today so many thousands and thousands of devotees go there to take darshan of Udupi Krishna. So near, very close to Udupi, there is a village called Pajaka Kshetra, and this is all in the south of India, in Karnataka district. And that is where this Madhyageha Bhatt was living, along with his wife Vedavati. So Madhyageha Bhatt, he was actually a very great devotee of Anantishwar. There was a temple of Anantishwar in Udupi. So every day he used to walk, it was quite a few kilometers away. So every day he used to walk from his village, Pajaka Kshetra, and he used to go and worship Anantishwar. So Anantishwar is actually a Shivaling. But you know, it is also explained in the scriptures that Anantishwar, so the Ishwar of Anantashesh, so actually it is Lord Krishna only in the shape, but the shape is such that people are thinking it's a Shivaling. But again, when this Madhyageha Bhatt was going and worshipping Anantishwar, he was very clear about the philosophy. He knew that Lord Shiva is a pure devotee of Lord Krishna, and Lord Krishna or Lord Vishnu is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He was not confused and worshipping Lord Shiva as Supreme. He was very clear that Lord Vishnu is the Supreme. So he always used to go there and worship. Now Madhyageha and Vedavati, they both had a daughter, but they were yearning for a son. For many years they were yearning, oh, we should have a son, we should have a son. But because they were very nice devotees of the Lord, and also they were exalted from exalted Brahmin family, they knew the proper culture of begetting children. So they realized that if we have to have a good pious son, then we have to perform tapasya. So following in the footsteps of Diti, you know, Diti performed the Payovrata sacrifice when she wanted to have Vamandev as her son so that he could take care of all the demons and give demigods back their kingdom. So in the same way, Madhyageha Bhatt and Vedavati also performed austerities. For 12 years it is mentioned, they performed austerities. Every day they used to walk from Pajaka Kshetra to Udupi And every day used to go and perform puja in the Anantishwar temple. And for 12 years, they only survived on milk and banana. Just milk and some fruits they used to eat. It is explained. So in this way, they performed lots of austerities to please the Lord. And also on the day they wanted to conceive the child, they actually followed proper Garbhadhan Sanskar rituals. They had a very good consciousness. And at that time, while they were doing these austerities to beget a very pious son, one day the pujari of Anantishwar temple, you know, the Lord had actually first wanted to speak through the pujari. So the pujari of the Anantishwar temple climbed on top of the temple. And you know how on every temple there's a flag. So he climbed on top of that pole, and holding the pole, he made loud noises to attract the attention of everyone. And then when everyone had gathered, he made an announcement. And he said that the Lord wants to speak to me, and the Lord is saying that very soon in this village, there will be a divine child who will take birth. And that child will come to smash all the bogus philosophies that are prevailing in the world right now. The purpose of that child will be to bring everyone to the path of pure devotional service and to the lotus feet of Lord Krishna or Lord Vishnu in his personal feature. Not in his Brahman feature or not even in his Paramatma feature. So that will be the purpose why this child will descend. He will become a great scholar. He will become a great pandit. Plus he will become a great proponent of bhakti. And his fame will be spread throughout the world. He will write so many books. And this child is going to very soon take birth in our village. So this is the prophecy which this pujari did. And when Madhyageha Bhatt and Vedavati heard this prophecy, they actually understood that, you know, maybe the Lord, some great child is going to be born in our womb. They had that feeling, they had that intuition inside them. So very soon they gave birth. Thus he was born, like Madhavacharya was born to Madhyageha Bhatt and Vedavati. And on his birth, he was a very divine child. He had so many auspicious marks on his body. Everyone who came to saw were actually astonished at the beauty of the child. Such an effulgence that child had around him. And even when the astrologers were called and they checked the astrological chart, they saw that he was full of 26 opulences and he is going to become a great, great, great Mahatma. He is going to become an Acharya. That is what the astrologers predicted. So very lovingly, Madhyageha Bhatt and Vedavati named him as Vasudev, because they were devotees of Krishna. They gave him the name Vasudev. So now we know that Vayu, it was Vayu only who had incarnated according to the instructions of Vishnu. So Vayu, when he comes to this material world, he takes three births. During Lord Ram's time, in Treta Yuga, he came as Hanuman. In Dwapar Yuga, he came as Bhim. And in Kali Yuga, he appeared as Madhavacharya. So Madhavacharya, when he was growing up, he was showing the traits and qualities of both Hanuman as well as Bhima. These are the features and the qualities that he always used to show. So when he was growing up, Madhavacharya was a very strong person, very strong personality. He was actually a great wrestler. And he had so much physical strength inside him, because obviously he is Hanuman and Bhima. And he could jump from one place to the other. He would be far away playing on some mountains. But if his mother called, in one jump he could be there in front of his mother. So this was the quality he had of Hanuman. And also the quality of Bhima he had. So he was, you know, we know Bhima was, another name of Bhima was Vrikodara. Bhima had a very, very strong fire of digestion. So Bhima had to consume tons and tons of food to keep that fire a bit calm, because the fire used to blaze inside him otherwise. So Bhima was a voracious eater. And that quality had also come in Madhavacharya. So we will discuss some of his childhood pastimes. So once his mother and father had to go out, leaving Madhavacharya under the care of his elder sister. And Madhavacharya immediately started crying for food. He was always hungry, like Bhima. Always he was hungry. No amount of his mother's milk could satisfy him, even when he was a really young infant. So he was crying, crying, crying. And the daughter, the sister, was trying to somehow pacify the child. Wait, mother will come, she will soon come and give you something. But he was absolutely not getting pacified. So she didn't know what to do. She placed him on the ground and she saw, because she was also a young child only, she saw, because Madhyageha Bhatt and Vedavati, they were actually having land and they used to cultivate crops. And they had cattle, like they used to have cows and bulls and all that in their fields, in their farms. So there was some horse dung, some grains which was kept in that room in a big pile, which was meant to feed the cow and the oxen. And actually this girl, because she didn't know what to do, she gave some. She put him near that pile and she gave some to him, to Vasudev, little Vasudev, to eat. And Vasudev ate that up. Now we know young infants actually cannot digest grains, especially grains which are meant for cows and oxen. And afterwards the girl actually went to look for her mother. She thought, okay, let me go and call the mother and come so that she will feed something to Madhavacharya. And by the time the girl was gone and they came back, they saw that the little Vasudev had eaten the whole pile of grains. And the mother was surprised. And she was actually worried also, because obviously parental love. So she got very worried when she saw that the whole pile of grains had been eaten. She said that this much grains, even two fully grown oxen cannot come finish. And how is it that such a young child has finished all this pile? And then obviously the concern set in that definitely he is going to get some indigestion. There's going to be some problem now because he's eaten grain which was meant for cows and oxen. But Vasudev, little Vasudeva Madhvacharya is actually Bhima. So nothing, he could digest all the grains easily and nothing happened to him. So that was where he was demonstrating the quality of Bhima as being Vrikodara or voracious eater. And also when he was growing big, once like now he was, you know, a little bit big, he had started talking and all. So his father used to buy cows and oxen and all that to plow the fields from one businessman. And his father was in debt. This businessman had come to recover money from his father because his father was not able to pay him for one or two cows and oxen that his father had bought. Madhyageha bought, Brahmat had bought from this businessman. And little Vasudev always, as usual, was hungry. So he was pestering his father, give me food, why are you not coming for food? Mother must have prepared something, let's go and eat food. Prasad. And Madhyageha Bhat said that please don't pester me, if you want you go and eat prasad. Can you see this businessman? He has come to recover his debts from me and I don't have any money to pay him. So this businessman has actually done morcha. You know morcha means revolting. He said that he will sit outside my door and he will fast till he gets money from me. And Madhyageha Bhat said, but where do I get money from him from? And how can I go and eat when he is fasting outside my house? So you go and eat and I will wait here. And then Vasudev said that, oh, you have to just pay him. Don't worry, father. I will go and take care of the businessman. So Vasudev actually went and spoke to the businessman. And he said that you want money because my father is not able to pay, you know, for the cows and oxen that he had bought from you. So you come with me. And behind Vasudev's house, there was a big tamarind tree. And we know how tamarind trees have lots and lots of seeds. Tamarinds have lots of seeds in them. And these seeds used to keep falling to the ground. So what little Vasudev did, he collected all these seeds in a bag. And then he told this businessman, he said, come, I'll return your money to you. So the businessman thought he's just a young child, he's joking. You know how little children play with something as play money? He said that he's just going to give me some play money. What will these seeds do? These are tamarind seeds. So the businessman also playfully put his hand out. And he said, okay, return my money to me. And when Vasudev actually emptied the bag of tamarind seeds in his hand, they had all turned into gold coins. And it was much more than what his debt was. So this businessman was surprised. And he was so happy. He thought actually the father had kept some gold coin somewhere and he's telling the child to give. So he took the gold coins and he went and thanked the father. He said that not only you paid my debt, but because you are late in paying the debt, you gave me so much interest also. So he took all the gold coins and he went away. And in this way, Vasudev actually satisfied his father's debt. And then he told him, his whole purpose was his father comes for eating because he was hungry. So this was like a side pastime for him. And then he took his father and he went to eat prasad with his father, which his mother had cooked. So this is the potency which Vasudev had since childhood. Also, once he was playing, there was a temple, there was a Durga temple next to their village on a high mountain. So Vasudev used to go on that mountain and he used to always sit in the temple of Durga. Since childhood, he was showing these spiritual inclinations, very religious inclinations he had. So he used to spend hours and hours and hours in that temple. And actually it is said in the scriptures that actually Vasudev was playing with Durga as his playmate. So he used to spend hours in the temple, and once when he was about to come out from there was a huge serpent which came over there. And many people saw that the serpent is coming and going to attack Vasudev and going to bite Vasudev. Now this serpent was not an ordinary serpent. Actually this serpent was a demon called Maniman. And this demon was existing during Bhima's time, during Mahabharata's time. And he remembered that this Bhima has come down as an incarnation. Again he has come down as Madhvacharya. So he wanted to take revenge because Bhima had killed that demon during the Dwapar Yuga. During the Mahabharata war, Bhima had killed the demon and this Maniman demon wanted to take revenge. So he took the form of a serpent and he came down to attack Vasudev, little Vasudev, who was playing on the mountain. And everyone saw that it's a huge serpent, and Vasudev was merely a child. He was not even 5 years old. And everyone got afraid, what are we going to do? Because they were also all scared to go near that serpent. But what did Vasudev do? Because he is obviously Vayu, he is Bhima, he is Hanuman. So he had great strength. So just with his toe, he crushed the head of that serpent. He put his toe on the head of the serpent and he crushed it. And while putting his toe on the head of the serpent, when he crushed it, the head split into thousands of pieces. And people were all astonished to see this immense strength. That such a huge serpent, and not even 5 years old, maybe he was 3 or 4 years old, such a young child has crushed it just by putting his toe on the head of the serpent. So this is how strong Madhavacharya was. And not only was he physically strong, but he was also very, very intelligent. Extremely intelligent person. So whatever was taught to him in his childhood, only once his teacher or his father had to speak, and he would immediately absorb it. And we know in schools, one lesson is not just taught once. It is repeated over a few weeks till the children actually assimilate the entire lesson or whatever they were being taught. But Madhavacharya, little Vasudev, only once he had to hear and he could memorize the whole lesson. And if the teacher or his father would repeat it for the second time also, he would tell that, why you all are repeating this? You already taught me last time. No, I remember whatever you had taught me. And they used to see, because Vasudev was very playful, extremely naughty as a child. So he used to just keep jumping around like Hanumanji, or he used to keep playing around. And that is all wrestling with other children. That is all he used to like to do. And his teachers used to think, even his father, Madhyageha Bhatt, used to think that what he's playing all the time, he's a very playful child. What he will know about whatever scriptures and grammar and all we have taught in Sanskrit. But they used to call him and he used to say, why all are disturbing my play? You ask me whatever you have taught last time and I will narrate to you. And in this way he was able to narrate. Even once if he had heard the lesson or the grammar or anything that was taught to him, he was able to narrate it completely without even one mistake. So when Madhyageha Bhatt saw that his child was so much intelligent and so much ahead of his time, he thought that I must do his Upanayanam Sanskar early, the thread ceremony. So usually it's done after the age of 7 or 9. When the child is becoming big. But Madhyageha Bhatt did it for Vasudev when he was only 5 years old. So he gave him the Upanayanam Sanskar, and then Madhyageha Bhatt thought that I must personally teach my child because he is so intelligent. I should not send him to any teachers or anything. Let me only sit and teach him. And in this way, Vasudev or Madhvacharya became a great scholar of Sanskrit, of all the scriptures, because he personally learned from his father, who was also a great scholar. And by the time he was 11 years old, he had mastered so many scriptures, he had mastered so many texts, he had mastered Sanskrit grammar. But he was starting to become restless now. He did not want to continue studying all these things. And because he was a devotee, he had come for a purpose in this material world. He became very restless to leave his home and find a guru. So he left his home, and near his village, there was a very renowned person. And who was also a great devotee of the Lord. His name was Achyutapeksha. So internally he was a great devotee of the Lord, but at that time, because Shankaracharya's teachings were so prevalent, Mayavad philosophy was so prevalent, so people were all confused. Even though internally they would not actually agree to Shankaracharya's Mayavad philosophy, internally they knew that the Lord has a form, and rendering devotional service to the Lord is actually the highest goal of life. But because they were all confused and misled, Achyutapeksha was also showing that externally, that he is actually Shankaracharya's follower. So Madhavacharya went and saw that this Achyutapeksha is actually a very detached person. He is on the path of transcendental knowledge. So he went and started staying in his ashram. And at the early age of 11, Madhavacharya had the desire to take sannyas. And he actually went and expressed it to Achyutapeksha. And Achyutapeksha said that is too early for me to give you sannyas. So just as when we express our shelter to our Guru Maharaj, then there is a waiting period where the Guru tests the disciple. In the same way, Achyutapeksha said that I will test you for 1 year. And after that, if you are still firm and fixed, and you are, because he thought he is just a child, he might just go away. He said, if you are still fixed in your sadhana, and you are still fixed in your vow of taking sannyas, then I will think of giving you sannyas. So actually Madhavacharya started staying in Achyutapreksha's ashram, and he started serving his guru very nicely. He used to render all sorts of menial service to him, and also he used to sit and he used to listen to whatever his guru was teaching. So in this way he was trying to, you know, show that to his guru that he is very determined to take sannyas. And back home, when his parents realized, Madhyagehabhat and Vedavati realized that his child, their son has left home and wants to take sannyas, they actually rushed to Achyutapeksha's ashram and they wanted to take him back home. Now we know, even when, you know, some aspirant on the devotional path express their desire to take brahmacharya, how much opposition is there from parents? All the brahmacharis would know that parents usually don't want their sons to become brahmacharis. They want them to stay at home, get married, give them grandchildren. But that is the same way Madhyagehabhat and Vedavati also had the desire. And they said that, no, you can't take sannyas. You are our only son who will look after us in our old age. And you are so young. 11 is not the age to take sannyas. You still have to study so much. You should get married, give us grandchildren. Same desires they started expressing. So in whichever way, whether, you know, Madhyagehabhat was pleading or he would sometimes chastise, you would say that you are just 11 years old, you are not obeying your father's instructions. So he would plead or he would chastise, but Vasudev or Madhvacharya was fixed in his vow of taking sannyas. Nothing which Madhyagehabhat said was swaying him from his determination to take sannyas. So then ultimately he said that I will never give you my permission to take sannyas. Then how will you take sannyas? Again, you know, that was not deterring him. Then he pleaded again, fell at his feet and he pleaded him that I don't have any other son who will look after me in my old age if you go away like this, taking sannyas. So at that time Vasudev said, because his heart melted, and he said, okay, if you have one more son, will you allow me to take sannyas? And Madhyagehabhat said that you have to take that permission from your mother. And then Vasudev arranged, through his divine potency, he arranged that actually Vedavati becomes pregnant and she gets one more son. So as soon as one more son was born, again, you know, Vasudev went and to ask permission from his mother that you please now give me permission to take sannyas. You have one more son who will look after you all in your old age. And his mother, because she was so much bound by parental love for Vasudev, she said, I will never give you that permission. So now Madhvacharya had to take some steps, some action, so that he could fulfill. Because he knew that the purpose of him coming to the world was to spread the pure teachings of Krishna Bhakti. It was to go out and preach and smash all these bogus theories which were there in the world at that time. So then he told his mother that you give me permission to take sannyas and then I will come and see you sometimes. You will be able to see my face sometimes. But if you don't give me permission to take sannyas, I will anyway take sannyas and you will never see me again. So he sort of threatened his mother. And then the mother and the father gave their permission. They gave their blessings to him to take sannyas. And he said, okay, I will visit you sometimes. So after that, his sannyas ceremony took place. Achyutapreksha actually gave him sannyas. And his sannyas ceremony took place in the Ananteshwar temple in Udupi. And the entire village had assembled to see this effulgent child, you know, accepting the danda of sannyas and putting on the robes of a sannyasi. And everyone could see that he would become a tejasvi sannyasi because there was so much effulgence in Madhvacharya's face. So, and at the time of sannyas, Achyutapreksha gave him the name Purna Pragnatirtha. So that was the sannyas name of Madhvacharya. And Achyutapreksha saw, whenever Achyutapreksha used to actually tell him, Madhvacharya was his disciple, he used to sit and learn from his guru. But obviously, because Achyutapreksha was misled, he also used to teach him the teachings of Shankaracharya, Mayavad philosophy. And very lovingly, but very respectfully, Madhvacharya used to actually smash all the philosophy that Achyutapreksha was teaching. But always he used to do it very politely and respectfully. So even though he was a disciple, and usually disciples don't smash the theory or knowledge which Guru is giving. But here, because the Guru was giving wrong knowledge and Guru was misled, Madhvacharya had to smash the theory, but never he transcended or transgressed the etiquette between a Guru and a disciple. And Achyutapreksha never felt offended. He in fact became convinced that yes, whatever Madhvacharya is saying is correct. You know, worshipping the personal form of the Lord has a personal form, and worshipping that personal form of the Lord is the highest goal. He also became convinced. So he actually wanted to make him the head of the mutt at that time, the mutt which Achyutapreksha was heading. And he wanted to make him the head, and he saw that he was spreading bliss everywhere by spreading the philosophy of Dvaitavad. That is what Madhvacharya came to spread, Dvaitavad philosophy. That means dual philosophy. We are different and the Lord is different. We are not, the Jiva is not one with the Lord. So because of spreading this philosophy, he was giving so much bliss to the people. And therefore he also gave him the name Ananda Tirtha. That was one more name which was given to Madhvacharya. And later on, because he became the great Acharya, his one more name which was given to him was Madhvacharya. So he made him the head of that math. And very soon Madhvacharya started widely preaching. He started traveling all over India, preaching the philosophy of Dvaitavad. And there were five principles which he was teaching, which was the philosophy of Dvaitavad which Madhvacharya was preaching. So the five aspects he was teaching was, there is difference between the Jiva and the Supreme Lord. Because Mayavad philosophy always said, we are one with the Lord. So he firmly wanted to establish that the Supreme Lord is different and the Jiva is different. The Supreme Lord is Anu and the Jiva is Vibhu, very tiny. So Jiva is very tiny and the Lord is great. He can never become one. He might have qualities of the Lord in minute quantity, but he can never become one with the Lord. He is always separate from the Lord. And that was the Dvaita or dual dualism which he taught about. That was the first aspect he taught. The second aspect of Dvaitavad philosophy was that the Supreme Lord and matter are also different. Because again, Mayavad used to teach that, you know, the Supreme has come down and taken the form of matter and therefore matter has taken control. Maya is stronger than this thing. He's come under Maya whenever he takes these forms of Krishna and Ram. That was again a wrong philosophy which Mayavadis used to teach. So he said matter is separate and Supreme Lord is separate. Just as energy and energetic are separate. And the Supreme Lord is controller of this matter. That is the second aspect which he taught. The third aspect was that the individual Jiva souls are also separate from each other. Because Mayavad was teaching oneness, all the time oneness. So he said, he preached that one soul is separate from the other and every soul will have different qualities. And they have different qualities by which they can worship the Lord. So it is not that everyone is one. Every Jiva is also individual. So he taught the individuality of the Jiva soul also. The fourth aspect of Dvaitavad philosophy which he propagated was that living entities and matter are also separate. So the living entity, when he comes in this material world, he is actually a pure soul. But when he comes in this material world, he has to accept a material body. He has to accept matter. So the body is made up of matter. But the Jiva or the living entity is a pure soul, which is part of the Supreme Soul, which is Krishna. So that was the fourth aspect he taught, how they both are also different. And then he also taught the difference between various material elements. So he said that again, you know, to smash the oneness philosophy, he said that a tree is standing in the forest and that, you know, that is a different quality which the tree is exhibiting. And for example, when there's a fire, then the tree will turn into ash. So that is a different material element that the tree is then exhibiting. So he said there is difference in the material elements also. And these were the five aspects which he actually came to preach, Madhvacharya in his Dvaitavad philosophy. Very strongly he was preaching these aspects. And then he decided, because Madhvacharya in his heart of heart knew that, you know, Vedavyas, Vyasadeva, who has written all these scriptures, is actually my guru and I want to directly learn knowledge from him. So he decided to go to Badrikashram. He knew that Vyasadeva is still living over there. So he took some of his disciples and he went to Badrikashram. And in Badrikashram, he stayed in the temple and he was worshipping in the temple. And by that time he had written his commentary on the Bhagavad Gita already. So he used to pray, he started doing tapasya in Badrikashram temple. Because he knew without doing tapasya and without preparing his consciousness, definitely he is not going to have darshan of Vyasadeva. So he started preparing his consciousness. Every day he used to do, you know, very very severe austerities in Badrikashram. And we know Badrikashram is in the Himalayas. So it was very cold there, but early morning he would take bath in the icy cold waters. And then he would go and worship the Lord for a long time inside the inner sanctum. And he also used to talk, have conversations with the Lord in Badrikashram. And there he showed the Lord his commentary on the Bhagavad Gita. And all his disciples who were sitting outside, they could hear the Lord speaking to Madhvacharya. And the Lord gave his blessings and he also gave his sanction. He said that yes, what commentary you have written on the Bhagavad Gita is completely in line with what my teachings are. So that is what you have written is correct. You are trying to establish the dual philosophy and you are trying to show how the Jiva and the Lord is separate, which is correct. So your commentary is very good. It's very succinct and also it is very practical. Very simply you have written such that even the common man who is right now misled by Mayavad philosophy, he will also be convinced. So once he got those blessings and he prayed intensely, and at that time Vyasadeva appeared to him. And then Vyasadeva told him that now you are ready, you can come to me. And Vyasadeva used to actually stay in, you know, higher up in Badrikasham in a place called Uttarabadri. Now Uttarabadri is a place which nobody in their physical body can approach. It is not visible to anybody in their physical body. But Madhavacharya, because now he had the permission of Vyasadeva, he decided to travel upwards now towards Uttarabadri. And his one of his foremost disciples, Satyatirtha. Satyatirtha was a very ardent follower of Madhavacharya. Satyatirtha actually was a disciple of Achyuta Preksha. And in the ashram, both Madhavacharya and Satyatirtha used to study together under Achyuta Preksha. But when Satyatirtha saw Madhavacharya actually smashing the Mayad philosophy, and he saw that Achyuta Preksha himself is accepting the philosophy which Madhavacharya is propagating, he also surrendered to Madhavacharya and he accepted him as his guru. So that is how the god brother became the disciple of the guru. So he was inseparable from Madhavacharya, and he said, I'm not going to leave you here. I'm going to come definitely with you. So he also started going with him towards Uttarabadri. And Madhavacharya, we know, he is Hanuman. So he could jump from one mountain to the other. He had no difficulty in climbing all those, you know, difficult parts of the Himalaya mountains. But for Satyatirtha, it was so hard to keep up. And by the time, you know, he had reached at least halfway, and it was almost sunset. But Madhavacharya was not fatigued at all. He was still energetic, fresh to continue and finish his journey to Uttarabadri. But Satyatirtha was completely exhausted. And he knew that he cannot continue if his guru does not take rest, or if his guru does not actually, you know, sit down for the night. But Madhavacharya wanted to continue. And so he told Satyatirtha to go back. Now Satyatirtha was in such a position, he couldn't even reach back before night would fall. So Madhavacharya, again showing his qualities of incarnation of Vayu, he just flicked his hand and the wind carried Satyatirtha back to the base from where they had started, at the temple of Badrikashram, where all the disciples were waiting. So that is where he again went back and he started waiting. And Madhavacharya proceeded to Uttarabadri. And he reached Uttarabadri and he saw that it is actually Vaikuntha. That is what is described in the scriptures. It was such a beautiful place. There were great sages whom you cannot see with your material eyes. You need spiritual eyes to see all these great sages. They were all sitting and reciting the Vedas. And the atmosphere was fully Vaikuntha atmosphere. It wasn't like, you know, snow and freezing and all these things, because it was at the top of Himalayas. And then Vyasadeva came and received Madhavacharya. And he embraced him, and then Vyasadeva sat down. They both sat down under a tree. And Vyasadeva started giving instructions to him. And he revealed his heart to him and he said, I'm so pleased with all the philosophy that you are preaching. This is my desire, that you go and preach this Dvaitavad philosophy, you know, and smash all the philosophies which are existing. I'm so happy that you are doing it already, but please do it all over India. And he also told him that now you should write a commentary on the Vedanta Sutra. Because whenever Madhavacharya used to preach to most of these Mayavadis, some of their scholars used to get defeated, but they were not ready to accept defeat. Because they used to say that, what commentary you have? What are you basing your philosophy on? Which scripture are you alluding to? Because there was no scripture which was there, which actually established the personal feature of the Lord. So then Vyasadeva gave him the instruction that you go and write a commentary on the Vedanta Sutra. Write your own commentary, and I'm empowering you that it will be considered a bona fide commentary, and people all over the world will accept it when you preach that commentary to everybody. So taking these instructions to heart and, you know, following Vyasadeva's instructions that you should go and preach, Madhavacharya came down. And it is said that because his intelligence was so high, while coming down itself from Uttarabadri to Badrikashram to meet all his other disciples, he had already written down the commentary to the Vedanta Sutra. And his disciple Satyatirtha was also empowered. So while they were travelling back from Badrikashram, Satyatirtha made more and more copies of that commentary. And the first copy they came and gave to Achyuta Preksha. And Achyuta Preksha was so happy to receive the commentary that now there is some valid philosophy. There is a backing of a scripture for your philosophy which we can preach to everybody. And it is mentioned that then Madhavacharya started traveling all over India. It is said that he also went to Navadvip Dham, where almost 200 to 250 years later Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would take birth. And he also went to Jagannath Puri from there, preaching his philosophy all over all these parts of India. And then he came to the banks of Godavari River to preach his philosophy. And on the banks of Godavari River, there were so many Mayavadis who were coming and challenging him. But he was defeating all of them. And then the greatest Mayavadi scholar who was present at that time, his name was Shobhan Bhatt. He came to challenge Madhavacharya. He said, you sit with me and you see if you can defeat me. Because I know Mayavad, whatever scriptures I have studied, and I know Shankaracharya's philosophy is the highest. How can you propagate that that philosophy is bogus and your philosophy is the highest? So that was like the match of the match, because everybody knew the scholarship and how highly intelligent Shobhan Bhatt was. And everybody knew about Madhavacharya's intelligence and Madhavacharya's hold on the scriptures as well. And everybody knew how much Madhavacharya had defeated many other sannyasis from the Shankara Sampradaya. So, you know, like for example, when India-Pakistan match is there, everybody is eager to watch. In the same way, everybody was eager to watch this debate. Everybody was thinking, oh, who's going to win this debate? Because scholars, you know, the pinnacle of scholars of both the philosophies are going to sit and debate now. So everybody sat down to watch the debate. And there were umpires also which were assigned to tell who will win the debate. And then the debate started. And Shobhan Bhatt, actually the debate went on for many days. It was actually quite this thing, because Shobhan Bhatt was a master of the scriptures, of all the Vedas. And he was establishing from Shankara's point of view how, you know, Mayavad is there, how we are one with the Lord. All these philosophies he was establishing. But ultimately Madhavacharya smashed that philosophy. Because Madhavacharya was empowered by Vyasadeva. He was sent by the Lord himself in the form of Vayu, as an incarnation of Vayu. He was ultimately able to smash Shobhan Bhatt's philosophy. And the umpires present there, then after some days, when he completely smashed his philosophy, they declared that yes, the winner of this debate is Madhavacharya. He has smashed the Shankara philosophy completely. He has established Dvaitavad without, you know, any doubt that Dvaitavad is superior and Dvaitavad is the correct philosophy to be followed. And in those days, it was not that if somebody, you know, loses, then there will be a riot. And you know how we see if India-Pakistan, if Pakistan loses, there are riots and somebody will put a garland of chappals, all these. Or if India loses and to Pakistan and comes, then gone. The Indian players will not be treated properly when they come back to India. But it wasn't, the culture wasn't like that. So when Shobhan Bhatt actually was defeated, he fell down at the feet of Madhavacharya and he accepted him as his guru. That was the culture which was present. That even though you are defeated, you don't keep an ego or you are not arrogant about it. You actually accept the person who defeated you as your guru. And in this way, the Dvaitavad philosophy was established. And we'll just end with one small pastime about how Udupi Krishna came to be about. Madhavacharya was the one who actually brought Udupi Krishna to Udupi. So Madhavacharya was once sitting on the banks of the ocean, which is near Udupi. And he was actually singing all, you know, great, because he was very good in singing also. So he was singing very beautiful songs of Krishna. And at that time there was a great storm in the ocean, and there was a boat, there was a ship which a very wealthy merchant was bringing. And that ship had lots of valuables, and that ship was actually going like a rudderless ship, because there was a storm, it was going to almost sink. And Madhavacharya sitting on the ocean, just using his cloth and his hands as direction, he actually helped the captain of the ship to bring the ship back to safety on the shore. Like he guided the ship how, you know, which channels to take and come back to the shore without getting drowned or without sinking. So when the captain of the ship, the owner, the merchant who was owning that ship, he came, he wanted to thank Madhavacharya, and he profusely expressed his gratitude. And he said, I have lots and lots of valuables in my ship. So I want to give whatever you want, you take from my ship. Because without your help, anyway, it would have sunk. I would have lost everything and I would have lost my life also. So you please take whatever you want. And Madhavacharya said, no, I'm a sannyasi. I don't need anything. But the merchant kept insisting. So then Madhavacharya said that your ship has come from Dwarka, no? He said, yeah, we set sail from Dwarka. So he said that definitely you must have brought some Gopi Chandan in your ship. Now Gopi Chandan is actually, the origin of Gopi Chandan is considered to be Dwarka. Because, you know, the Gopi Chandan of Dwarka is very famous. Even at that time it was famous, and that Gopi Chandan was used all over the world. So he said, you must have definitely brought blocks of Gopi Chandan in your ship. And the merchant said, yes, actually we brought. You know, because our ship, we had to balance the ship. So just to balance the ship, we have put many blocks of Gopi Chandan inside our ship. So you want that Gopi Chandan? He said, yes, I just want that Gopi Chandan. So they actually brought the Gopi Chandan out for Madhavacharya. And when Madhavacharya smashed open one of the blocks of Gopi Chandan, the deity of Udupi Krishna came out from there. And that deity is a very beautiful deity. It is actually Krishna in his childhood form. So in one hand he has a rod, and in one hand he has a rope. And that was the deity actually which was given darshan to Devaki. When Krishna was in Dwarka, he was ruling Dwarka. He had already become the king. Devaki once approached Krishna. And she said that, you know, as soon as you are born, you are taken away from me. You were taken to the shelter of Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda, and I was never able to witness all your childhood pastimes. When I saw you, you were already a youth when you came back. And I have heard that your childhood pastimes were so nectarian. All those, you know, your form as a baby and all the makhan chor pastimes, all these were so nectarian, and only Yashoda Maya could relish them as a mother. But I am also eager to see that form of yours and relish some of those pastimes. So just to satisfy his mother Devaki, Krishna actually showed her the form of baby Krishna. And that form was when, you know, Yashoda Maya used to churn butter, that rod which you used to use, she used to use to churn butter, and the rope with which she used to, you know, in the olden days we see, you know, how there is a rope around the rod and they churn butter like that. So that rope and that stick, both were in Krishna's hand, and that is the form he showed to Devaki. And it was such a beautiful form. And even Rukmini was passing by. So when Rukmini saw that form, even her heart melted. And she said that, I want to worship this form of yours always in the form of a deity. So then immediately they called Vishwakarma, who was a great architect. And Vishwakarma carved that deity of Krishna in that baby form, holding a stick, the churning stick and the rope. And then that deity was personally worshipped by Rukmini for many, many years. But then we know the pastime when Krishna left the planet, the entire Dwarka city went under the sea. So it seems the deity also went under the sea, and then it got trapped inside like a block of Gopichandan formed around it. And this is the same deity which was then revealed to Madhvacharya. So this deity then Madhvacharya carried personally. In fact, there were so many people who tried to lift the deity, but nobody was able to lift the deity. But Madhvacharya, because he is Bhim, very strong, he single-handedly carried the deity, and he established the worship in the Udipi Krishna temple. And very, very high form of worship they do. There is a mat in that temple, Madhvacharya's mat. And there are Mathadipatis who actually, the sannyasis, who take turns. I think every 8 years or something they get a turn to worship these deities. So that is how this deity is worshipped with very, very high standards. So not only Madhvacharya established the Dvaitavad philosophy, and he smashed all the bogus philosophies which were present at that time, prevalent at that time, like the voidism philosophy and Shankara's Mayavadi philosophy. But he also established the highest deity worship of Udipi Krishna in Udipi. So these were some of the glories of Madhvacharya, whom the Lord had sent out of his Bhaktavatsala feature to save all the suffering people who were misled by Shankaracharya's philosophy. So we'll end here. If there are any comments or questions or corrections.
I have seen Udipi few times, but I didn't know the past times. So today you have revealed. It's so interesting. That's why Prabhupada said that if you go to Vrindavan, you have to take some devotee with you, and then you can endure the past times. So it's very, very important to go to the farm. We must take someone who knows the place around and they can tell you. So the beauty.
I haven't seen.
I liked it very much, but I did not pass times. Today I appreciate it. Thank you.
Hanuman had the quality of?
Flying.
Yes. He had the quality of jumping. Like even though he was far away on a mountain, he could come to his mother. So I'm assuming that that quality of flying is also there within that quality. Because how can you reach from many, many kilometers away to his mother in one jump? So that means obviously he's able to fly also. So yeah, he has that quality. Any other questions, sir? Sorry, I didn't get the last part. If the Lord is equal?
If the Lord is equal to everyone, then why won't all the living entities put into one of the categories?
One category.
Is it the desire? Is it mentioned anywhere in the scriptures why it was done like that? Because it can't be the desire of the living entities himself, because it was there from the beginning of creation. So how does it start? If you like.
The The question is that if the Lord is equal to everyone, like we discussed in the earlier part of the lecture, then why is it that there are some Nitya Siddha devotees and some Nitya Baddha devotees? So then how can the Lord be considered as equal?
Yes.
And is there any mention that how this happened?
Is there any mention in the scripture that the reason why the Lord...
Yeah, so this question has been addressed and discussed for a long, long time within the Vaishnava Sampradayas and even in ISKCON, that what was the origin and why did we all come down here. So I remember when we were doing a Bhakti Shastri course in Canada under Brihat Mridanga Prabhu, he is now Bhakti Brihat Bhagwat Swami. And we had also asked this question that why is it written in the scriptures anywhere? So he mentioned with the analogy, he said that more than concentrating on why we are here, and he gave the, you must be knowing that pastime about the fire. If there's a fire in the house, then we don't try looking where is the fire, but we try to understand how to come out of the fire. So that is the reason he gave. So what I have understood little bit from reading the scriptures or hearing from senior devotees is that there was a time zero, and at that time Krishna gave the choice to devotees. If we consider a time zero, obviously it's all eternity, but he gave the choice to devotees, and there were some devotees who chose to be inside the spiritual world and eternally serve Krishna, and some devotees wanted to explore or wanted to serve them, serve their own this thing, serve separately from Krishna. So he gave that choice to them. So whoever chose to serve Krishna eternally became the Nitya Siddha devotees, like Yashoda Maya, Radharani, all the Ashtasakis, Gopis, Gopas, all these people. But whoever chose to, come down to the material world, Krishna facilitated. He said that, okay, since you all want to explore and you all want to serve separately, then I will create the material world for you where you will have the feeling that you are satisfying your senses. And also Krishna, we know the purpose of the material world so that they get reformed, because no one can satisfy themselves separately from Krishna. So he also wanted that reformation to happen. Again, Krishna deals with devotees differently, obedient child differently, naughty child differently, but ultimately his purpose is the same, to bring them to loving him. He loves all of them equally. So there he wanted to show his love by creating the material world, which would also reform them and make them turn back to him and come back to him. So that is the explanation which I had heard in one of the lectures, or I read it somewhere, that Krishna actually gave the choice to the living entities, and they did, because Krishna never interferes with our free will. Like, a father, if we have children, you can never force a child to love you. It is up to the father. You can force a child to be obedient. You can force a child to do the right things in life. But love can never be forced into a child. You can never force a child to love the parents. That has to be inherently there. If it's not there, just bad luck for the parents. So in the same way, Krishna never forces his love upon us. So that is the only thing, free will, which he is given, whether to love him and serve him or whether not to love him and serve him. And that free will, some living entities exercised by not wanting to serve him, and some living entities exercise that we want to serve you. So that is how I read or heard somewhere that is how the Nitya Siddhas and Nitya Siddhas and Nitya Baddha devotees came about.
So due to the choice of the living entity, not yes, because of any other phenomenon?
Always it is because of the choice of the living entity, always. Even, when we see that, we were once, Prabhupada also gives many times, in the famous Prabhupada CD which is there of the Hare Krishna movement, when it started, Prabhupada says that once upon a time we were all in the spiritual world serving Krishna very nicely. So again, that philosophy is also there which Prabhupada says. But one day we decided that I don't want to serve Krishna. I want to, what is it like to be served rather than to serve? So the moment that feeling came in the living entity, he was exercising his free will of not serving Krishna. And at that moment then that living entity actually comes down in the material world to understand what is it to be served rather than to serve. So that is one more explanation which Prabhupada gives. But again, there also it is the choice of the living entity only who is making the choice, okay, how is it to be served rather than serving Krishna all the time. Again, he is exercising his choice in that matter also.
I have heard that when we come from the spiritual world, we all become Brahmas and then we come down. Have you heard something?
Yeah, like? I have also heard that from
you. Then what happens when you Brahma and then?
If when you come to the material world and you are a Brahma, if you become a pure devotee as Brahma, you don't get entangled in the mode of passion, because there is so much mode of passion in creation. So you don't get entangled, but you stay a pure devotee, then you go back to the spiritual world as Brahma only. But most of the times, you know, the Brahmas fall, like not fall down, but they keep progressively moving down because they get entangled in the modes of material nature.
The sun will become Brahma then.
Yeah, that's what I
want.
The choice they make because of the desire.
Sorry?
And the choice they make based
on
the desire.
That they make. It's not that Krishna gives, you know, well, I mean, I've not heard that Krishna, you know, says to everybody at some point, okay, you've got a choice to make, where are you going to be, Nityabhada or Nityasiddha? Because obviously it's because we're eternal. Results of our desires, we can't blame Krishna for that. So it's your fault, Manhattan. I'm here. He's facilitating the spiritual and the material world in order to satisfy the desires of the living entity, and he's detached from that and doesn't force us to make a decision. As a result of our desire, then we get what we deserve. Mm-hmm. And he let them know. Just like a parent, you know, you can't tell your son what to do.
Very
true. You can try, but in the end, he'll make his own decisions. Right? And
yes.
You have to live with it. And Krishna does. He lives with the fact that, you know, so many living entities.
And he patiently waits for them to come back.
He waits. He knows I'll give that for us. So,
thank you.
So, you know, he's equal to everybody in that he doesn't favour or punish whimsically.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Udupi Krishna?
Yeah.
To Madhavacharya or originally?
Originally. It went under the water.
Yes.
What's the...
Yeah. So... That's explained, isn't it?
Hmm?
That's an error. It's self-manifesting.
Yeah, it's a
self-manifesting.
Yeah. It came, you know, because Gopi Chandan is part of the sand, like the dust of Dwarka. So it got, obviously, it is a block. It is the mitti which is there in Dwarka inside, which it was then, and as a block, the merchant had excavated some sand to put on his boat to balance the boat. So as a block of sand, it came inside the sand or mitti, whatever we say, the mud of Dwarka.
It wasn't in the ocean or something?
No, no, because Dwarka has come out now, no?
Okay.
Now there is Dwarka already there.
Yeah.
It had submerged in the ocean years ago, but now there is a Dwarka which is already there. And it was excavated by this merchant to balance his boat, some of the sand which was there on Dwarka. The Gopi Chandan of Dwarka is famous, that's what I heard. It's not that it's the only source of Gopi Chandan.
Then it comes from many places.
Many places, yeah. We'll end the class here. Granthraj, Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.